Erica Ellis Stewart. I'm currently serving on the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Board of Education as an at-large member. I do have two children. One is a junior in college. One's a senior in high school. And in my professional job, I work for a local nonprofit called Mental Health America of Central Carolinas.
And what school did your kids go to?
Gosh, my kids went to a bunch of schools. They were magnet school students all the way through. So they both did Montessori. We started Montessori at Billingsville. Then we transferred over to Highland Mill Montessori when they moved the program from Billingsville. Both of them went to Piedmont IB Middle. And then my son went to Harding University High School prior to the changes. And my daughter went to Philip Berry Academy of Technology. And after they left CMS, they both attended the North Carolina School of Science and Math in Durham.
And that's where they graduated from that?
Well, my son graduated from there. My daughter is a senior currently.
As you said. So why are you running for school board again?
Well, I'm running for reelection because I feel that public education is facing a number of challenges that require commitment, great leadership, and experience around the board dais. We're looking at many challenges that are coming to public education from the General Assembly in Raleigh. We are trying to work to do things like increase teacher pay to above the national average. And then we're looking at what we can do to increase student achievement and make sure that all students get a quality education in CMS. And I want to continue to be a part of that work.
So one of the big things you're going to be doing that you're actually already in the process is student assignment, redrawing boundaries. What do you think should be the priority when you're thinking through that process?
I think the priority for the board should be to be intentional, to be thoughtful, to seek the input of the community, and to really look at what's happening on the ground in Mecklenburg County and to make decisions that are in the best interest of children.
So what does that mean as far as do you prioritize, for example, stability? Do you prioritize concentrations of mixing up concentrations of poverty in schools? How do you ensure that that student is best looked after?
Well, I think that anything that you do is going to be multifaceted. I think that you want to try to promote and maintain stability to the extent possible. You want to make sure that we can maintain cost in line. You want to make sure that we address issues of diversity. We want to make sure that we issue issues where our kids getting the rigor that they need school by school, but also looking at the high concentrations of poverty. In the last 5 to 7 years, we've seen a proliferation of the number of schools that have above 80% poverty, and we have to figure out how to do something different with those schools because the data is clear about the predictive link between a low-performing school and a high-performing school. And so we have to have a greater sense of urgency about how we educate those students. And a piece of the puzzle might be student assignment, and we need to make sure we're talking about that as we have the conversation, but it goes well beyond student assignment as well.
So would increased busing be part of that then?
This conversation really has not been about busing, to be honest with you. Currently, it's been about what are the demographics that we currently see. We've had a demographer come in and speak with the board so that we know what's happening nationally, as he put it, the Browning of America and the Browning of Mecklenburg County, and really to provide us with clear data to help direct our path. I think, you know, as we continue to look at additional data such as the magnet school review that we just completed, I think there's some things we can do around increasing magnet school programming and magnet school availability, taking the attendance cap off of magnet schools that can help with this issue. But this is, from my standpoint, it's not a conversation about busing.
So how do you, you know, if increasing magnet programs is one way to increase diversity, how do you strengthen those programs without harming neighborhood schools, your local schools?
Well, I think if you look at it right now, CMS is educating on a daily basis about 147,000 kids. We only have about 24,000 kids in magnet schools. So that's not the huge preponderance. The neighborhood schools are, by and large, our largest piece of the pie. So I think that there is room to expand magnet schools without harming the neighborhood schools. I think you always want to give parents choice. And the other piece of it is, even if a parent isn't choosing a magnet school because of the academic choice that's there, we are putting in place more and more academic, specialized academic programs in the homeschools than we ever have in the past. We have the Cambridge program, we have STEM, we have language immersion in some of our homeschools. And so parents aren't necessarily having to look very far to choose specialized programs. But for those who want something a little bit more and a little bit different, the magnet school option does still exist.
How do you think CMS, or let me rephrase it, you know, should, how is CMS dealing with the increase in charter schools?
Well, I think one of the things we're trying to do is to help our principals become better marketers of their school and of their product, making sure that they know how to sell the high points and really get connected with the community that they serve, and so that that community is well aware of what they have to offer. I think there's a lot of misconception out there about a number of our schools, whether it's the academic rigor, whether it's what type of programs are actually available, or whether it's the culture of the school. And so we've got to begin to break down those misconceptions and really market and put our best foot forward with those schools. And so that's one piece of the puzzle. The other piece of dealing with the charter school proliferation is really making sure that every school is a school of excellence. And we're not there yet. We do have schools that are D's and F's, and we've got to have a sense of urgency there. But we have to make sure that every school is a school that a parent and a child would feel proud to select and call their school, and that as they are in that program at the school, that they're getting the rigor, they're having high expectations, they have a quality, highly effective teacher in front of them on a daily basis, and that there's a strong principal. So there's definitely a recipe to getting a school right and to making one successful, and we have to make sure that we go school by school to make sure that every school gets that touch of excellence.
You've been on the board now for several years. How is CMS doing that?
In terms of making every school a school of excellence? I think that, you know, making sure, one, that we have the right principal at the helm of the school is number one top priority. Because if you don't have a strong principal, a principal who is working in collaboration with the teachers, someone who's visible to students and parents, it's going to be very difficult to have a successful school. So I think every principal appointment that the superintendent makes is extremely important. To make sure that we're getting this recipe right. The other piece of it, like I said before, is there a highly qualified teacher in front of every classroom in that school, as opposed to a long-term sub or maybe an inexperienced teacher who is still struggling a little bit. So we have to make sure, and this is one of the challenges we've had as a school system, is teacher pay and competitiveness. We need to make sure that we can recruit but also retain the best and the brightest. And sometimes that also includes our veteran teachers, because our veteran teachers are retiring in droves because they have not seen the fruit of their labor with the most recent pay increases. They got a very paltry sum, most of them. So we have to make sure that we return the teaching profession to a higher standard of esteem, and showing them that through pay, I think, is going to be one way to make it competitive.
And of course, CMS cannot tax on its own.
It
needs the county and the state to do that.
Yes, we do. We need them desperately to really take a look at what made North Carolina an education state 20 years ago and try to return to that. One of the things my colleagues and I have been advocating for with our legislative agenda is that we get teacher pay in North Carolina to at least the national average. Right now, we're about $10,000 below the national average, and states on our borders are just really kicking us down. They can pay $10,000 more than we can, and teachers are driving across the line to those school districts. They're moving across state lines to teach, and it's really having a detrimental impact not only on CMS but on teaching across the state, and that's problematic, and we need our state leaders to recognize this. We need them to have a sense of urgency around finding the funds and having the political will to increase teacher pay to a livable and competitive wage.
And I know, yeah, I mean, the board has been unhappy with state lawmakers, partly because of teacher pay. They don't see that it's increasing as much as the board feels it should. The county has also not granted requests for more money as well from the CMS board. So it seems like the district is
swimming upstream.
well, you know, is having a hard time at least convincing the state and the county of ways it wants to go. You mentioned principals and how important it is to have a good principal at a school. CMS has had a hard time finding and recruiting principals. What is the situation now, and how do you recruit good principals?
Well, I think you have to have a really good sense of what a school has to offer and what type of leader it needs based on the people in that building, based on the program requirements. Programs like Montessori or specialized programs, you definitely need a principal who understands what the requirements of the program, you know, are required. You need someone who definitely can work with teachers effectively and work with them in a collaborative fashion. I think oftentimes teachers feel like they are under attack from all sides, and you don't want to feel like that from your principal. And so the fact that a principal can come in and treat them as instructional partners, I think, is extremely important. One of the things that, as a district, we are going to be challenged with, and it's similar to the teacher pay issue, is pay equity for principals, for assistant principals, and for deans of students, because the pay scale for those folks hasn't moved either in several years. And so principals are having the same question: do I stay in the state of North Carolina, or do I go elsewhere where I can get paid a little bit more?
One of your biggest decisions as a board is also coming up, picking a new superintendent. What are you looking for in a new superintendent? Would you be good with someone who is Broad trained? Would you be okay with someone who's coming outside of the education sphere?
I think I'm looking for what I looked for 4 years ago. I'm looking for someone who has a track record in K-12 education, someone who can come in and garner the support of school administrators and teachers, even in the midst of low teacher pay and low morale, someone who has the political savvy to deal with what's happening at the state level and the General Assembly, and also what's happening at the federal level, where we haven't had a reauthorization of ESEA in over a decade. Someone who not only who can be the chief lobbyist of the district, but who has the business acumen to run a $1.3 billion organization such as CMS. We're a large district, someone who understands the dynamics of an urban-suburban district, and someone who can come in and see the 9 board members as a cohesive governance team and be a part of the vision that we have for public education.
What have you learned from past superintendents like Peter Gorman and Heath Morrison that will inform your search?
Well, I think that, you know, everyone comes in with a variety of skill sets. And as a board, we have to figure out how to allow them to utilize those skill sets for the benefit of the district. We have to figure out how to mitigate any blind spots or areas of development and help them to improve in those areas. And really, I think one of the key things that has been surprising for the last couple of superintendents is just the amount of time and effort spent doing battle, if you would say, in Raleigh. We have spent an inordinate amount of time dealing with issues and bills coming out of the General Assembly.
Do you think students in North Carolina are taking a reasonable amount of tests?
I think we are taking an insane amount of tests, but unfortunately, those tests are required by the state of North Carolina, and there's not a lot we can do to lessen the number of tests currently.
Yeah. There are several thousand CMS students who were suspended, sent home over the past few years. Nearly 3/4 of them were African-American. Is that a problem, out-of-school suspensions?
Out-of-school suspension is definitely an issue. And in Charlotte-Mecklenburg and other large urban suburban districts, disproportionality around suspensions has been long a topic of conversation. One of the things I have actually been advocating for over the course of this year are my colleagues looking at a moratorium on suspensions for pre-K through second grade. I serve on a national steering committee for urban education, and one of my colleagues on the other side of the country in Seattle has been working on a similar measure, and they actually just passed it in the last week. But part of the reason I want us to consider this is because when I had staff pull the data for suspensions for pre-K through second grade for last school year, this was probably around March, there were about 1,200 suspensions. And you think about that, that's 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, and 7-year-olds. Those are our wee babies. And if we can't, as adults, figure out ways to deal effectively with behavioral challenges, mental health issues, social emotional issues in the classroom with the wee babies, we need to figure something else out. I think there are some other types of interventions we can use outside of suspension as the first tool with those groups in particular. I used to run a dropout prevention program here in Charlotte, and the data tells you that once a child is suspended, they're 3 times more likely to get suspended again. Children with multiple suspensions are highly likely to get involved in the criminal justice system. And you've heard all of the discussion about the school-to-prison pipeline, which is very real, particularly for children of color. And so we've got to figure out at the beginning of this continuum, what can we do to keep kids in school longer, to make sure they're getting the instruction they need on a daily basis, and to try to figure out what other types of interventions and supports we can utilize outside of the suspension lever.
We have about 1 minute left. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have about your run?
Well, I will say that I feel like my leadership over the last 4 years has been thoughtful. It's been intentional. I pride myself on asking the hard questions. If you watch our meetings, you will see I am typically the person asking questions about everything that comes to the table, because I want to make sure that the work that we're doing as a district is right, that we're doing things for the right reasons and not just to check something off a box. You know, my background has been for the last 20 years advocating on behalf of children and families in this community. And so I see myself continuing that advocacy on the school board, wanting to make sure that we are producing productive citizens through the children who graduate from CMS. That's extremely important to me. So, you know, I'm asking people to vote for Erica Ellis Stewart because of that thoughtful leadership, because of that advocacy, because of that desire to see Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools be a premier school district in this country.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ellis Stewart.
Thank you.